Hello and welcome to Open Minds Radio. Today we're going to be talking crop circles and, as usual, UFO news. I am your host, Alejandro Rojas, and to talk some news with me, we've got the Super Duper. I think I've already used this one, Super Duper, but I like it. UFO specialist extraordinaire, Jason McClellan.
I am just fine with Super Duper. You can reuse that one.
Yeah, that one's pretty cool.
How you doing, Alejandro?
Not too bad. How are you doing?
Pretty darn good.
So I did want to mention, you know, talk about a little bit about our interview from last week, Jan Harzan, the MUFON director. And that was kind of cool because you're on this show, Hangar One. And, you know, you guys, the second episode aired, what, Friday and probably played throughout the weekend?
Yes, sir.
Cool, cool. And you've got this really groovy cardigan that you wear?
Yes. In every episode.
What's back east?
Got my magical cardigan.
It's chilly back east. But it was kind of interesting and really cool to hear about the hangar and that it's a real hangar.
Yeah, that was cool to hear. Yeah, it's a really interesting interview to hear what he has to say about that, and I'm glad we got the hangar issue cleared up.
Yeah, that was an exclusive. I don't think anybody knows that.
Yeah.
You know what's funny is the hangar is so strange looking. It looks so old. It's almost like it's a steampunk type of thing because it's got like this old kind of Victorian or maybe even older look, but it's a hangar because, you know, it's got these corners that are made out of brick. And I thought for sure, you know, I don't know why I was thinking this. I thought even maybe it was something that was back in England or something, but
well, it looks like it, because, like you said, on the corners, you know, there's these big brick towers that are like octagon or something. They've got many sides to them, and, yeah, really, really crazy, really English-looking.
Mm-hmm. And I guess I got mixed up, because the production company you are working with for the show isn't from England.
That's right.
But the one Maureen is working with is out of London.
That's right.
So I think for some reason my brain got that a little mixed up too. But that was kind of cool to hear that it was a real hangar with some really interesting history.
Yeah, I like that. And it makes the name of the show even better.
Yeah, makes all that make sense.
That's right.
So I want to also tell people about our guest today, who is Patty Greer. She's a crop circle researcher and filmmaker, and Lee Spiegel spoke glowingly of her a couple episodes ago when we did our review of the conference, and a lot of people really appreciate her work, and she's won several EBE awards, so that's really cool. And, of course, those are the Film Festival for the UFO Congress and the statuettes. If you haven't seen this, you can go to our YouTube, and we always post the awards, but you can see these, you know, really cool alien statuettes, and it's these aliens with these film cameras, and they're really nice. And so she has won several of those. So we'll talk to her about a very interesting story about how she got involved with crop circles in filmmaking and about her films. And she's a very energetic, really enthusiastic person. And so that definitely will come across in the interview.
That's how her lecture was at the Congress, too. She's just a very, very happy person,
yeah,
full of energy.
She's a supercharged woman, and it was kind of funny because she talks fast, which is great because she gets lots of information conveyed. But she had something like 350 slides she wanted to go through, and we were like, oh, no way. And she's like, but I talked really fast. And I thought, well, if anybody could do it, she could do it because she does talk really fast. But, of course, she only got to about half. But still, getting to like around 150 slides in an hour or so is really impressive because that's difficult to do.
Yeah, only she could do it.
Yep. So, however, Jason and I, before we get into the interview, of course, always talk about UFO news. And so, let us talk about the news, UFO news. What's your story for the week, Jason?
Well, you know, as we keep talking about on a somewhat regular basis now, there are so many missions and tools and instruments planned and being launched in the search for alien life. And on Tuesday, March 4th, NASA released an overview of their 2015 budget request, the money they're requesting for their 2015 budget. And some of it, one of the requests was for funding to formulate a mission to Jupiter's moon Europa. Now, this is super exciting because many astrobiologists feel that Europa is potentially the best place in our solar system to look for extraterrestrial life, and many have been pushing for a mission for years and years and years now. Well, they're formulating a plan. That's what they want to do with this money. And with Europa, experts believe that there is 2 to 3 times the volume of all the liquid water on Earth there. So it's likely to have a wide variety of ecosystems, and a recent study even suggests that the building blocks for life are common on Europa. That's why astrobiologists are so excited about looking there. So we'll see if they can pull off this mission, and again, this is just funding to formulate a plan, and it's unlikely they're actually going to receive anything close to the full amount they need to launch a mission, but I guess because it's even part of what they're considering in the budget, that means they're looking at it, there's interest there, and it may happen sooner rather than later. So it's not super exciting, but it's kind of exciting.
Yeah, I think it's kind of exciting. I mean, all these projects are always so long time coming, but it's exciting at least that, you know, these missions are starting to get on the books or looked at, because I think as a lot of people feel, this could be the low-hanging fruit. I mean, you know, these vast oceans could be the places, or are very likely places, where there could be life, and how cool would that be? I mean, I don't know. I think it's really exciting because the possibility of some kind of, who knows, huge whale-like creatures and what if they're very similar to the creatures here on Earth? You have, you know, like a jellyfish type of things. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? And that's the exciting thing, because we don't know, and I think that would be even crazier if they were similar to life on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's more likely that they're going to be things that we can't even imagine.
Yeah.
But also point out that another interesting and potentially exciting thing included in NASA's budget proposal was money to help to achieve a manned mission to Mars, and that's something they've been working on for quite a while.
Yeah.
I still think no matter what happens with their budget and whatever plans they have, I still think Elon Musk is beating them all.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what's really exciting about all of this, especially with, I don't know that there's any private, because the private projects usually aren't as scientific, but at least we're going to Mars. I mean, I don't think it's going to be too long. I mean, the one-way trip is kind of scary, and personally, I almost hope that doesn't happen, because that's just too dang scary, and I don't think those people understand what they're in store for, being stuck in a this little pod for the rest of their life. But a real trip, a back-and-forth trip to Mars is getting closer and closer to reality.
It is, and you're right. I mean, a lot of the private things that are planned aren't exactly scientific missions or anything like that, but I do think there's a lot to be said for physical presence on a planet or a moon. You know, having people actually there is a lot different than having a robot rolling around, so...
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And even if you do have the Mars One colonists living there, they're living there forever. So
yeah,
they're going to see what's on the planet every single day. So
yeah. Yeah, so pretty exciting. And yeah, the robots can't have all the fun.
That's right.
The robots.
I mean, they can, and soon we'll all be robots. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Well, what is your story, Alejandro?
Yeah, well, we've got some cool sightings that are up, and I think I already told people about this one where this gentleman got a hold of us, and he saw an orb with his son, and that's kind of cool. They got really close to it. But hands down, my favorite story for this week and for a while, I just really love this story, is this one I found on a Serbian military site about a Yugoslavian Army jet fighter pilot who talks about some of his UFO sightings. And some of you may or may not know, there is no Yugoslavia anymore. It's been broken up into Serbia and other countries. And so this guy used to fly with the Yugoslavian army when it was together. So this was some time ago. But he is writing his memoirs on this website and in bits, kind of like each chapter he posts. And this chapter is about UFOs, which is cool that he even decided to write one. But it starts off how he's arguing that, you know, UFOs are real and that, you know, there are people in the military who understand that and believe that, even though they're afraid to talk about it because people are made fun of when they talk about it. But there's a real deal, and here's another reason why I believe that, not just because real credible people talk about it, but also because I had my own encounter. So he talks about his jet fighter encounters. These were usually mostly in the 70s. They were in the early 70s. And essentially, they're very similar to other military accounts where they're told, hey, you know, while they're out on a training mission or something, can you go check something out? And they say, okay, sure. They're vectored into an area where they see an object, usually a luminous object. They try to chase it, and it zips off at incredible speeds. So that's essentially what happened to him, and it happened to him on a few times. He then retired. He actually came to the United States and worked on the F-5 jet fighters for a period of time in the, while he was still with the Yugoslavian army. And then he became a military attaché for Yugoslavia and Turkey, and then he retired in 93. But even after he retired, he said he saw it. He had a couple sightings, a couple of which he filmed, and that he thought for sure would be in the news the next day, that other people around had seen him, but they never were, which just kind of, I guess, confirmed to him that people are really shy about this stuff. So it's a really cool story. I think it's exciting. I just wrote for the magazine a story on the Washington, D.C. sightings in 1952, which were bigger, I think, than people realized. There were more events than people realized. Really exciting stuff. But similar stuff, where these things are seen on radar by several radars. Jets are vectored into the area. Jets see an object. The objects fly around at incredible speeds. So, you know, really credible, kind of leaving these guys, all these military guys, kind of scratching their heads. And, you know, what's funny is this guy says they just never talked about him. Once they land, you know, they kind of look at each other. They're like, wow, that's really weird. What the hell was that? And then they just don't talk about him. They're not asked about it. Everybody just kind of ignores it and leaves it alone because they're like, well, we chased it and we couldn't catch it. What else are we supposed to do? So, really cool, cool stuff, I think.
Yeah, I do enjoy these military stories, especially the ones from pilots. We hear some of the most incredible stories about, you know, trying to encounter these things and just hearing about the remarkable capabilities. And like you said, you know, it's strange. A lot of the times they just don't talk about it, but other times we hear stories where they're actually told they shouldn't talk about it.
Yeah.
People worry about losing their jobs and this whole sort of culture built around it that it's not something to talk about. And if you do, your job is in jeopardy. I mean, it's unfortunate, but we hear that a lot. But I love these stories, man.
Yeah. It doesn't seem as though this guy felt his job would be in jeopardy, but he did feel that. Yeah, that he would be looked at as weird and stuff, so he didn't talk about it because of the ridicule factor, so which is just as strong, I think, especially in groups of guys, you know, when you don't want to be made fun of or something. So, yeah, really cool. And in fact, if anybody who listens reads Serbian, at the beginning of the story, I have the link where the story is, and if you could go look at that, I use Google Translate, but Google Translate is not perfect. It doesn't work that great. And so I know there was a lot lost in translation, and I didn't want to be inaccurate in any way, so I only grabbed the pieces out of the story that translated well. And I probably lost some interesting aspects of the story just because it wasn't translated right. So if anybody wants to go look at that and you know, send me some information that was left out or something, feel free to let me know. And also, if someone could, someone told me the A, I left the A because in the guy's name, Swada Hamzika, and they said, well, when you trans, I didn't understand what they said. They told me that his name didn't include the A's, and I don't know if that's because of the translation in English or something, but if someone could explain that or tell me if that's accurate or not, that'd be helpful too. So, really cool stuff, Jason.
Yes, sir, and I'm glad you chose that story to talk about because it is one of my favorites on the site right now.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And so, of course, everybody can go to openminds.tv. You'll see the stories we just talked about on the front page. And on the front page, you'll also see a link to a new Spacing Out episode because we haven't had one in a while because of the conference.
Yeah, because of the conference and because we moved offices and just had our had to wait for the studio to be finished. So finally finished. We're back in action.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us for the news, Jason.
It is always my pleasure.
Our pleasure as well. Let's go ahead and bring on Patty Greer. I am very happy to welcome to the show Patty Greer, Crop Circle researcher and filmmaker. Hello, Patty.
Hi, Alejandro, and hello, everybody out there.
How are you doing today?
I'm so excited. I almost feel like I'm back at the International UFO Congress just hearing your voice and sensing your smile.
Oh, well, good. Good. I'm glad that comes across over the air.
It does indeed.
So, did you have a fun time at the Congress?
I tell you, it's my favorite week of the year. I've come every year with a movie except one and brought home 3 Ebby Awards that are my lovely little aliens with the movie camera on their shoulder, and it makes me very happy to be a part of the family there.
Mm-hmm. So you have 3 of them so far?
So far. I'm looking forward to one more, but you know, the table can really only hold 3 where they are now. So it's perfect.
Well, I have a feeling there's probably more in your future.
I have a good feeling about that, yep.
Mm-hmm.
So stopping me.
Well, there's a interesting history as far as getting into filmmaking, but you did a talk at the Congress, and I believe this is the first time you've talked, even though, how many years have you been going to the Congress?
In 2007, I missed the deadline for the film festival, and I had my brand new Crop Circle movie called The Wake Up Call. Anybody listening? And I had no idea what I was doing. As you know, I never trained. I never planned to do any of this. But after laying in a crop circle and having a really extremely interesting experience in 2007, I came home and made a movie, full feature film in 6 months. And the whole thing was magic. And I've made 6 movies up till now. But when I had this first movie, I'm holding it like this little gold nugget going, what do you do with this? Where do you take it? So I went online and I found the UFO Congress. And I missed the deadline, but Nikki, the family back then in 2007 or 8, said, send us a copy anyway. My dad, Bob Brown, loves Crop Circle movies. So he threw a special Tuesday lunch to show my first movie, not even in the film festival. That's how supportive he was. And so I've brought a movie ever since. Every year, my world premiere has been at your Congress.
How cool. That's really cool. So, and so you've been going every year since?
2007 or 8.
Mm-hmm. And how was your experience then, getting it, being able to present?
Oh, this was the highlight. You know, none of this was ever planned. I was never a researcher. And, you know, I always dabbled with the unseen world since I was a kid. I did Ouija since I was 7. But we weren't experience. We weren't trained, and we went and loved it, my best friend and I, in her glass house at least once a week until we had invited a bad spirit, and we didn't know what we were doing, but it scared us enough we never did it again. So I would see things, you know, always as a kid, but I never used the word UFO or ET. And I have to say, I take offense to the word alien or abduction. You know, to me, it's more contactee and extraterrestrial, because the difference is honoring them. I mean, don't you feel the difference when somebody says alien? It's like, do you mean somebody from another country that you have a judgment about? You know, it sounds like a judgment rather than extraterrestrial, which to me sounds really, how I feel, welcoming, honoring.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly the term comes with some baggage, and I guess even by definition it means something strange and different.
Yeah, and even unidentified flying object. You know, it's like, well, how vague can you be? So for me, you know, when I come to the Congress, until this year when I was given a booth, and I had, they threw me a standing ovation after my talk. I had no idea that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Can you see through those lights?
Well, when I walk out on the stage, I'll be able to see the people. And you know what? It's so hectic and busy that I often forget the details of what's happening because there's so much going on in my mind. Okay, we got to do this. We got to do this. We got to do that. So I didn't remember that specifically, but I believe you. So that's awesome.
Well, I had no idea until I was at a sacred circle at 10:30 at night on the day I spoke, which was not only Valentine's Day, it was a full moon on Valentine's Day. I mean, it was, you know, because I'm a girl and I do love the world of magic and the unseen world. When there's a full moon, you know, that's when we believe, and I imagine you too, that the veils are thin and we can see more in the night sky. And it's a very exciting time. Even the wolves like to howl.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say even the wolves, they're even more telepathic and all that than we are. But, you know, the more we start listening to the unseen worlds and wildlife and our pets, dogs and cats, you know, how they sit at the door when you're miles away, they can sense you're coming. We need to learn that.
Yeah.
You know? And that's what I think ultimately the goal is of your Congress convention, is for us all to really advance our thinking.
Maybe we should do that, because I like to do that. We should tell everybody, let's all go outside and howl at the moon together.
Nah. Well, I'll tell you something that I did not say on stage because I didn't have the time, but I'm going to tell your audience to do this. And this is what started me on my back in a crop circle in 2007, and I know that I had an experience where I was taken. And when I came back, I'm laying on my back, I'm in a crop circle, I'm sunburned. I didn't know how long I'd been there. There were still no people. But I heard somebody coming in the crop circle, and that's what brought me to. And I opened my eyes, and I saw things in the sky that I had never seen before. And the more I focused on it, the more I realized that I was seeing a parallel reality. And I find that I can tell a lot of people how to see it. And most people say, oh, my God, I've seen that before. And, you know, the doctors will say it's the veins in your eyes or the veins in your eyelids, but it's really not. We now can see a parallel reality with our eyes, and I think it's really important just to know all it takes is to look.
Mm-hmm.
When you go outside, have you ever seen, when you relax your eyes and look up into the blue of the sky, the little glints of light that you can see everywhere, like little glitter darting around?
Mm-hmm.
So I want to encourage us to start looking at that and then go into a stare where you really relax your eyes and watch those little glitters darting around. And then the second step is to notice the trail of light they leave behind them. And again, this is about relaxing your vision and not focusing, but watching energy. And when you start seeing these little white darting things that most people can see, and you start noticing the trail behind them, then your eyes are at the level where you'll start seeing what I think is some form of plasma energy, and they are everywhere. And every time I take people outside and I start with that slow, start with the glimpse, then watch the trail, then you'll see these plasma round things and snake-like things, and they're like the consistency of a jellyfish in water, but it's in the sky. And you can see these things if you take the time. And I really think that that's the lesson right now in this day and age, is taking the time to get out of your busy life and start looking and start listening telepathically to the information we're getting. All six of my movies were made through telepathic listening. I didn't do any research, Alejandro. I didn't make reservations with any of the people that were in my movies. It was all spontaneous combustion. All of them happened by my willingness to be in full surrender, and I would just know where to go.
Mm-hmm. So I want to get back to that because that's really interesting. And your first experience, so in 2007, you had this experience with the crop circle. What encouraged you? What were you doing at that time, maybe professionally or with your life? And then what encouraged you to go visit the crop circles?
I was a musician my whole life. I was a professional musician for about 33 years. And in 2001, I did something really stupid. I left my dentist of 27 years, who was a brilliant, honest man, because he told me that I should get the mercury fillings out of my teeth. So I went for a second opinion and trusted a doctor I didn't know for thousands less. And the guy must have been playing with mercury fillings so long, those silver ones that they call amalgam are full of mercury, 50%. And we had agreed that he was going to put white fillings and a gold crown in me, and I woke up with a mouthful of new mercury fillings, and my hands went down for 8 years. Of all things, my harp fingers, beautiful calluses turned into open sores. And so when you see photos of me in the past in the crop circles, you see sometimes I'm wearing gloves. So I was so desperate to heal, and my doctors, for some reason, chose to lie to me for 7 years. They gave me the wrong blood test. And I went in there 3 years ago and showed them the right blood test, but they're still choosing to give the wrong blood test. Okay, end of story there. So this is an orchestrated thing, mercury fillings in people, but we don't have to believe that's true because I finally got the right test. It's called inorganic mercury, and now I'm healed. But had I stayed with the doctors and trusting all that, I would have never healed.
Mm-hmm.
But during the course of my desperation, when I was trusting my doctors, and I just like, you know, what did I do wrong? I went to the crop circles. I gave up on humans. I went to every kind of healer and couldn't get well. And it was because I had all this mercury in me, you know, it's going through my body. So I went and started laying in crop circles. That's what took me there. Who'd guess?
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And so then tell us, in detail about this experience in 2007.
Well, I was in such deep surrender because I had pretty much lost the use of my fingertips now for a couple years. And it was serious. It was really serious because, you know, music was how I identified myself to life. I had two pianos, two harps. I played all the time. I gigged and did really, I played for the spiritual masters that came to America. I mean, I was very serious with playing music. And all of a sudden, it's gone. And it was so painful that all of a sudden, a lot of friends that pretended to be friends were gone. And, you know, I was in an unusual level of surrender, which I would have never expected because I would have had the life of being the golden child. It was easy. Everything was easy. And it was my surrender that took me there. So in 2007, I went for 9 weeks by myself to the crop circles. And the epicenter is an area between Stonehenge and Glastonbury, and it's right in the center. It's called the Avebury Stone Circle. Have you ever been there in England?
No, I've never been to England. I wish I would.
It's really lovely.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason the circle makers have chosen this area more than anywhere else on the planet, I'm pretty sure, is because when we document all the crop circles in the world, almost every single one has been located over an aquifer, underground water pool. And Wiltshire and southern England and this area is sitting over the largest chalk aquifer in the world.
Hmm.
And these historic white horses in this area that are emblazoned in the hill, they carve away the earth above it to get down to the chalk. So they've got a 2,000-year-old chalk horse carved up on a hillside. And then they've got these 200 and around that area year-old horses, white horse, they call them, in different areas, sacred sites of southern England. And the interesting thing about this area, not only is all this chalk and the white horses, but the other thing is it is laced with more sacred sites, I think, per every square mile than anywhere else maybe on the planet. And I might be incorrect with that, but I know that when we lay out the ley line map of this area of Wiltshire, England, and surrounding areas, including Stonehenge and Glastonbury. A ley line map is a direct line between two sacred sites, is a ley line. So this area looks like a spider web because there's so many sacred mounds where people have pilgrimaged across Europe for thousands of years just to go and be at Silbury Hill or West Kent at Longbarrow or Stonehenge or any of these medieval places where people used to gather to do sacred ceremony. So the energy here of the earth and the people and the connection is really, really deep. And when it's sitting over all this water, you can imagine it also radiates into the water. So when we look at the end of summer at a ley line map and we stick a push pin of every crop circle that's happened, not only are they all, almost all, sitting on a ley line, but many of them are sitting on a crossing of two ley lines, which we call a node. And that's a super power point.
Mm-hmm.
So this area is obviously a good place for the epicenter, but it's very possible that there might be other places with massive amounts of crop circles, but nobody's flying over it or driving by it or walking into it to know that it's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know.
So with your experience in 2007, you then had this feeling you had to make movies.
It wasn't like I had any feeling. I started taking an insurmountable amount of photos.
Uh-huh.
And I had just an Instamatic camera, but I took it everywhere, and I started getting on those little planes, completely fearless, which is not like me, to get in a plane. And the pilot said, door on or door off, and I'm like, oh, that's funny, and he just looked at me, and I said, you're serious? And he said, well, the professionals, and I'm like, ugh. So there's no door on my side, and I, you know, grab this little seatbelt. I'm looking around for my halter. I've got no door on, and it's just a microlight. And I'm like, where's the halter? Where's, the seat belting? And he said, oh, it's just that little thing. I mean, like a man's belt with a buckle that solid. It was ridiculous. So I go in these little planes, and this was before I had a movie camera. I didn't know what I was doing. I just had my little Instamatic. Next thing I knew, I had taken 1,100 photos of crop circles.
Wow.
That's a lot. And every day, all I wanted to do is be in them, and I would walk till I was almost limping. And at night, I would go up on the hill and just be there alone sometimes at these places where we knew that in the field below, crop circles happen. There's certain mm-hmm. fields where every year, one, two, three crop circles happen in East Field. They always happen at Milk Hill. They always happen at, you know, we have different farms in Avebury, at Avebury Manor, at Avebury Truslow. There's always crop circles in these same fields year after year. So at night, we do what's called night watch. And we go and we watch the hills. And there's, you know, sometimes other photographers there with movie cameras, infrared, set up, and they just film for hours and hours. And it's really cold. But that's night watch, you know, and you hope to be that person who hits play and gets to film a crop circle being made by the balls of light.
And so, and prior to all of this, like you said, you had no film experience.
No, nothing whatsoever. So at the end of these 9 weeks, I felt like I knew everybody that was active in the crop circles that summer.
Mm-hmm.
And we have this little central place, meeting place. It's called the Silent Circle. And they have a cafe, and they sell our movies and books and different things about crop circles. But everybody meets there. And you know that if you go there, you're going to run into other researchers and get the whisper about what crop circle happened last night and where. And you want to get there at the crack of dawn and be in what we call ourselves the front line, so that you get into the field before a bunch of people go tromping in, or one of the few, but there are some tour guides, takes 10 people into a crop circle, and then they get really stepped on, and it becomes harder to tell right off the bat if it's human-made with boards and ropes where they're obviously broken, or if they're ET-made or something extra-dimensionally made where the weed is not broken. Where it's bent, it's actually an expanded, like an elbow bubble, and it bends over. And when you've got 100,000 of them doing it side by side by side, and some are going left, and the next ones are going right, and the others, I mean, there's some mastery to this artwork. And in the peak of summer, there's only 3 hours of darkness. So this is being done, I think, the ones that are being done by the circle makers are being done in seconds. And there's only one filmmaker that ever hit, he wasn't even a filmmaker, he was just a random guy, but he hit play. Have you ever seen the Oliver's Castle footage, 1996, where two balls of light go over a wheat field, and boom, in seconds, that field's down?
Mm-hmm.
You've seen that?
I have. Some people feel that that was hoax footage. What do you think of that?
Well, I had a most phenomenal experience with it, and I think this is one of the things that excited Lee Spiegel. I know that my balls of light pictures with the doorway are really exciting to him. But, you know, I think the biggest thing I've ever done, which stuns me, not one researcher will pat me on the shoulder and say, God, thank you for finding me. But here's what happened, and I know it's real. I came home with permission to use the original footage from Janet Osebaert and Bert Janssen from the Netherlands, and they were the early people in there. They were there that day when John Wavy came in. They were lit in England that summer in the crop circle. So I think they have the original footage, and I got permission to bring it home and use it. So I stick it in at the end of this movie, and when I did the 1,100 photos, at the end of summer, I went to this Glastonbury Crop Circle Symposium, and I realized everybody on stage are my friends. They're the people I've been hanging out with all summer.
Cool.
I hired the film crew that was filming that event for a day, and I asked my friends if I could just bring the crew around, and they'd meet me in the crop circle or at the sacred tree or whatever. And so I filmed everybody, and I thought it was for my family, my friends, because I was just, like, eyes huge, how amazing it was. So I get this crew up in the plane, and I'm paying for all this, and I bring it home, and I hire a kid on Craigslist to put it together so I can show my family, still not realizing I was making a movie. And I lay this thing out at 77 minutes, and it ends with the Oliver's Castle footage, where the balls of light lay the crop circle down in seconds. And all of a sudden, Alejandro, the hair went up on my arms, and I got chills head to toe, and tingles on the top of my head, and my eyes got really glossy, and the editor looked at me and he goes, you look weird. And I said, I'm getting the feeling that I get inside a crop circle. I feel like the circle makers are in the house. And he's looking at me, and I said, look at my arm. And he's like, holy crap, what's going on? And I said, reverse the footage. He says, why? And I said, reverse the footage. It was really creepy. So he reversed the footage, and we're both watching it. And I said, slow it down. He said, how slow? And I said, I don't know, 30%. And we both looked at each other. And it was one of those moments where I went, wow, that was creepy. So we reversed it. Stop. And there it was right before our eyes is this communication between the two balls of light on that original footage. There is a band directly between the two balls of light that's black, white, white, black, white. It looks like a communication. And because of how I found it, it wasn't like I knew 30% by doing math or reversing it because I thought so. It was they came in the house and I got telepathic direction and I was willing to listen. And this poor editor, he just looked at me like, that was really weird. And I said, guess what? We just proved the Oliver's Castle footage is real. So I'm super excited about it. I'm like, oh my God, this is incredible. This is the best thing for crop circles, you know, of all time. And nobody still today will deny it or acknowledge it.
And people can go, on YouTube and find this video. Or do you have it at your website where people can go look at that and see for
Absolutely.
Themselves?
Mm-hmm. My website is PattyGreer.com, PattyGreer.com. I have 6 movies, but 2 of them show this footage. My first movie is called The Wake-Up Call. Anybody listening? And you can see it at the very end of the movie. And because nobody acknowledged it, I was like, how could this not be happening? You guys should be so excited. My God, this thing is real. I stuck it at the beginning of my 4th movie called Crop Circle Update, The Wake-Up Call. And at your event, it won Best Feature Film in 2010, and it won Best Musical Score, that movie, The Wake Up, the Crop Circle Update movie, because I stuck that proof in the first 5 minutes, in your face, And I showed it three times at the very beginning of the movie, maybe 5 minutes in. And still, I'm like, really, guys? Are we this competitive? Because for me, it's not that I'm all brilliant or that I'm a scientist. The Circle Makers are working with us.
I think it's partially, too, with some of this stuff, though. It's kind of like people, because you know how it is. People are focused on their particular area and what they're looking at. And it's just, do you think it's ignored? Or do you think it's more like they just don't know what to do with it?
If I were a researcher and I saw one of my compadres lay that down and tell me how it happened, and I'm watching it, and it's there in front of my eyes, and it's very undeniable, I'd say, dang, and I put my arm around him and buy him a beer. Champagne. I mean, you know, what we need now is to break history. You know, we're in the worst corruptive time, I think, of all time, where we're being lied to on so many levels that people don't even know what to believe anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got so many infiltrators, even in our beautiful party there, that I found myself saying to someone who I knew was an alphabet soup person, saying to my face something that I knew was untrue, I just said, can you imagine how hard it would be to wake up every day at an event like this and know you're lying to everybody you see? Can you imagine? You know, anyway, that's all I have to say. And then I really feel like I just hope they hear something that excites them enough to jump ship and come join us. Because to me, this is the greatest story never told. It is so exciting to know how real this is, don't you think?
It is. And I mean, one of the greatest stories, and I keep going back to this because I think it's just so terribly interesting and I want to know more about it, is just how, because I think it's incredible that someone who, you know, didn't know anything about filmmaking or anything is compelled to do so after, you know, being in a crop circle and then makes these films. And now you've made several of them. What was that like? Like, when you first picked up a video camera, was it really foreign or?
Totally.
Yeah, and then, so how did you learn it? Do you feel you learned it pretty quick? It seems like you did. And how did it feel to go tackle that and make your first movie?
The whole thing's just been kind of like a dream, Alejandro. And when Bob Brown invited me to come to the International UFO Congress and show my brand new movie because he liked it that much, I was just over the moon. I was like, oh, my God, I'm supposed to be doing this. I mean, it really threw me. So as I'm coming to the event, my editor said to me, take my new camera, little Panasonic P2. And I was like, yeah, right, I'm going to do that. I don't even know which end point.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there's a lens. But, you know, that's what I said. So he said, let me get you a pass. And I said, I'm on my way to the airport. Don't tease me. He said, take the camera so you don't hire a film crew. I know you can do it. He hands me this thing at the Congress in 2008. I go into my hotel room, and he said, do you want a tripod? I said, no, I don't want to haul stuff. Oh, that was smart. So I got the camera in the case. I'm carrying it around, you know, clutching it to my breast, like I can't believe he handed me his movie camera. And I go to the hotel room. This was in Laughlin. And I zoomed in on the curtain, as he told me, and then I zoomed in on the TV back, the bed back. I strapped that thing on over my little low-neck shirt, and I went out and filmed everybody after my movie played on Tuesday. I had the whole week of everybody knowing that Bob Brown introduced me as the new upcoming UFO filmmaker, and now I've got this weapon in my room, a camera, and I kind of had an idea how to use it. You open the little door, you turn these knobs. Seriously, that's all I knew. And I did movie two.
Mm-hmm.
29 of the people at the UFO Congress in 2008, and it turned out pretty good. And then I started thinking, wow, dang, I think I can do this. So I bought myself a camera, went back to England that summer in 2008, and filmed three movies. Not that I knew I was doing it, but everywhere I went, I thought I was making a fairy film, but I was in the crop circles every day because I was totally drawn like a magnet, didn't have any option. And so I was filming the crop circles, and it was, you know, 2008, and all the people in Europe, years ahead of us, or people that I knew over here, were talking about the 2012 phenomenon. And so I'd say, well, after you tell me about the crop circles, why don't you tell me about 2012 also? So I made the 2012 movie. It's called 2012, We're Already In It. And one of the more amazing speakers was a woman named Patricia Corey. Mm-hmm. And sitting in the crowd circle, we're buddies by now, and it was the most beautiful day. The circle was one day old, 2:30 in the afternoon. I couldn't believe nobody was there. Usually on the second day of a great crop circle, there's at least four, five, six of us, and it was empty. So it's really cool. She's over there meditating, getting ready for the interview. I'm setting up the camera, and as we drove up to this formation called Westwoods, the name of the farm, she said she was telling me about this creepy couple that she swears are not human. And they're always in the crop circles every summer, and they look like Barbie and Ken. Perfect, beautiful blonde couple, perfect everything. And I said, don't be silly. I saw them in this crop circle yesterday. They were here. I don't think they'll be back. So she said, I swear, I can feel people behind me, but those people, I can't feel. And dang this thing, I got to tell you. I'm setting up the camera. I do a full 360, empty field. I'm ready for her. I'm just kind of starting to wait. And I hear crunch, crunch, and I look behind me, and there's Barbie and Ken and some creepy little entity being. I mean, it was a very weird-looking, hunched-over maybe person. I don't know, but the three of them were walking through the crop circle, and I just flipped my camera on them and zoomed in, and the guy says, hey, Patty, what's up? And I said, oh, nothing. He said, what are you filming? I'm zoomed in on his face, her face, the creepy little thing. And I'm like, oh, nothing, just a pretty day out there. And I watched them, you know, go into the, they never disappeared, so I didn't know, but I was pretty surprised that they all of a sudden appeared and were walking through the field. So she comes over, sits down, and I'm ready to interview her. And all of a sudden, the first helicopter came over, and it circled over, and I'm sure it was just filming the crop circle. It was such a beauty. And then it flew away, so I lit up the camera. We started the interview, and it was going great. And then comes the second helicopter, and it wouldn't leave, and it stayed over us for a very long time. And it had a red light blinking between two black metal things pointed at us, and it hovered, circled over us for 15 or 20 minutes. It was really, really a long time for just the two of us to be right below this thing, and it was low enough to blow our hair. So I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all, and I skipped coming back the next summer. I felt uncomfortable. It's not a game I want to play. I'm not there to, you know, do that. So I did skip the next year, but I had all this footage from filming all summer. So I did make 2012 We're Already In It, which won Best Feature Film at your International UFO Congress Convention. So I was wired. I was so excited to make movies because now I was winning these awards.
Mm-hmm. So that is pretty cool. I mean, and what do you feel like? I'm sure you feel, well, I would guess that you feel you have a goal, like you were given this ability or a compulsion for a reason.
Yeah, you know, it's all disclosure, Alejandro. And we're in such a bizarre war with humans right now that we have this much of a faction with that much money hush-hushing this. And it was interesting, the guy in the Netherlands that gave me that amazing spinning crop circle footage that I showed at your event sent me a link to Hangar One files. Have you seen that yet? It's
uh-huh.
Yeah. But, you know, it's like talking about all the presidents that blatantly most of them knew, were sure that many of them knew. But, you know, this secrecy is it's over the top and it's unnecessary. Humans can handle it, and we're ready for a miracle because what's happening now needs to stop. And, you know, when I look at the phenomena that I got gifted, which is the crop circles, I mean, what a beautiful thing for a girl. They're beautiful. They're energized. Your whole body lights up. When you're 10 feet from it, you can feel it. I know when I'm close because I'll just lift my arm and go, well, that does that. I can tell I'm close. And I look behind me at my boyfriend in 2011 because he said, I'm not going to make anything up or pretend I feel. And I'm like, no problem. And as soon as I lit up as we were walking in the first crop circle of that summer, I looked behind me and he had his arm up, hair standing up, goosebumps, and his mouth was hitting his knee. So it's a really physical feeling, and I don't think we're being radiated. I think it is something extra dimensional going on. And when I look at most of the speakers at most of the UFO congresses, or I don't mean conventions, it's mostly men, and it's mostly history. rather than what's happening today. And maybe if some of them, of course, are talking about what's happening today, but the thing that stuns me is the fact that crop circles have been slid under the rug. It's like nobody's come out with anything new other than me, and I'm being like slid under the rug. Thank you for inviting me, and I got a standing ovation. And Lee Spiegel on your show last week said, Patty Greer is the first person that's actually said something new about crop circles. And I'm this crazy little person that's never been in the community jumping up and down going, look, these things are real. I have all this proof. And then I go back to my little mountain retreat and I'm, you know, back in the woods again. But how can something this blatant be swept under the rugs? You know, at all the conferences, they're talking about the ships, the beings, the lights in the skies, but they're ignoring the most blatant thing of all, which is the sticky notes in the fields, the text messages in the fields.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just England. It's Mexico, Argentina, some really obscure countries. Of course, Italy, Holland, France, Belgium, the Netherlands, Denmark. They're all getting crop circles year after year after year. Only a few in America. And when they happen here, the military shows up and blocks the field from researchers. I'm sorry, that doesn't make it look very fake to me.
Mm-hmm.
And but I don't want to go into the fake nature because it's really, for me, more about how important the crop circles are. And the movies that I made, you know, two of them proving that the Oliver's Castle footage is real is a very important piece of trusting the crop circle reality, and the real circle makers are not humans.
Mm-hmm.
That they are, in fact, these extraterrestrials. So when I was there in 2010, I was up on night watch one night, and my friend Monique from the Netherlands was also doing night watch, and we had different cameras, and we were both filming these orange balls of light at a distance. The hill that I was on had a bunch of cows and a guy from England that said, "Hey, mate, those are just military flares over there." And I'm like, well, that's good. I'm glad you think so. But I'm excited because these things are moving toward me and I'm going to keep taking pictures. So this is the one that I think is probably the most outstanding stuff that I've shot. And my friend Monique is these orange balls of light. They are not orbs. And orbs are what a lot of people get on camera. They're beautiful. They're opaque. You can see through them. They have patterns within, and they usually have a thicker, dense border than the interior where you can see the life inside. These things are different. They're orange, and they're gold, and some of them are yellow, but they are far more dense. They are balls of light carrying vehicles that everybody has, not everybody, many of us have seen over the crop circles through the last three decades of summers. I happened to film them, and Monique with her 35 millimeter camera filmed these incredible close-ups where you could really see the detail of these balls. And as they started to turn, you could see what looks like a cutout of a piece of pie. And as it turned more, you could see this, it appeared to be a big black band that went across this ball of light. In 2010, I filmed these guys that had fallen out of their truck in front of me at the Silent Circle. It was early in the morning. My boyfriend and I had been in the formation since 6:30. I was so excited with what I'd filmed. We're just sitting there having coffee. We feel like our day was almost done. And I see these two guys fall out of their truck and barely be able to walk toward the research center. And, you know, we're thinking, ha-ha, you know, they're drunk or something, you know. And all of a sudden, I said, they don't look drunk. They don't look right. And I got up and ran over. I said, do you need help? And the guy could barely look off the ground. And he came up into my eyes and he said, oh, what we saw last night. Oh, my God. I'm like, come join us. Honey, please get them coffee. And this guy and his buddy that barely spoke English said, my eyes don't lie. It's my rational mind that's trying to find a rational explanation. But last night over East Field, we saw these orange balls of light. And we were out there on the hill for hours. We saw nothing. So we went to our camper van and heard these French people coming excitedly up the hill. So we went back down and these things lit up over East Field. Then they disappeared and then they lit up again. And these two guys from Belgium described that these balls turned, a doorway opened, and they saw illuminated ball beings with arms, legs, and a head come out of the balls of light.
Hmm.
It was really stunning.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, I'm really trying not to make a movie, but can I interview you? And then everywhere we went in England, everybody we met, when I had my camera, told us the same story pretty much. It was scary. My poor boyfriend, when we got back to America, he bailed. He was just jaw hanging at the end of every day. And I said, you remember I told you I wanted to leave my camera at home? This is what I meant. And he didn't believe me that when I have my camera and I'm in that area, they hand it to me on a platter, Alejandro. It's the mm-hmm. weirdest thing. But the next day we go to a wedding in Glastonbury, hours away. And on the way there, we stopped at a crop circle in a place called Roundaway Farm. Climb the hill. I said, leave the camera in the car. Of course he doesn't. He brings it on his back. So I said, okay, well, we got the camera. I've never interviewed kids. Listen to those kids laughing. So I bring these kids up on camera. There's three of them, a mom and a dad and a big dog. And they speak Dutch, but the mother could translate. I said, would you ask the children what they think of this crop circle? So the one little girl, like 5 years old, long blonde hair, big blue eyes, like a crystal child, starts speaking really quickly in Dutch. And the mother translates, she doesn't want to talk about this crop circle. She wants to talk about the one in East Field we were in the other day. Whoa! And the five-year-old says, they told me that they were the orange, I saw the orange balls of light like a candle flame, and they told me the circle's not done yet. They're going to make it bigger. I'm like, a five-year-old is predicting, they told her. So that night we go to a wedding, and I meet another guy, and I said, what do you do? He said, I do automatic writing in the crop circles. I said, anything interesting lately? And he pulls out the book, slaps it open. He says, yeah, the other day I was in East Field, and they were the orange beings. And I asked him, and they wrote the word yes. And then they told me the circle's not done yet. They're going to make it bigger. My poor boyfriend, oh, my God, I thought he was going to die. And sure enough, the next day the formation was bigger. 3 days later, phase three, it was incredible. And that movie's called Four Stories, One Event, Other World. This is how movies happen. And when this boyfriend watched it happen in front of him, I just kept seeing his jaw on his knee, and he was just like, I can't believe what I'm seeing. And I said, yeah, I guess I'm kind of in surrender still. So really, it happens so dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
And when I've got the camera, it's like they just throw it at me. I mean, when I took the guy behind the church and said, can I film you? You know, the guy that couldn't even look up, from Belgium, that saw the illuminated light beings come out. I go behind the church. I've never been back there. And there's four steps. The lighting is perfect and the wind stops. I mean, it's like you guys make it so easy. And this is what convinces me that I'm supposed to be doing it. My Evie Awards at the UFO Congress show me that the information is accurate and real and accepted by, in my opinion, the smartest community of ufologists in the world. We all come together for a week and blow the roof off one resort. So to be invited to be a speaker there and to have a standing ovation by that many smart people was a really lovely balancing act for how difficult the business has been with humans. It's been a nightmare on a financial level. It's been the worst people I've ever dealt with. But on an extraterrestrial level, it has been the greatest experience of my life. And I feel deeply honored to be a part of this.
My last question, because we're running out of time, and is... when it comes, it sounds like you're saying there's kind of a twofold purpose to these crop circles, that they're not just a message, but they're also making some sort of physical change on people, like healing or having a physical effect on people as well who visit them.
Well, you know, we didn't talk about the messages in our 45 minutes. All over the place, but the messages are why the circle makers, the extraterrestrials, are choosing to leave us messages and fields that will last for 2 to 3 months, hoping that people like me will get in those little planes with no door and lean out with a huge movie camera mm-hmm. and film these things to share them with people. The sacred geometry is one that they love, because sacred geometry is typically a center point, and all these patterns come out symmetrically from it, which says to the brain, ah, You know, the brain looks at it, and it's no question. It's just kind of like a massage where you can look at it and realize that if you can relax your eyes and see this 3D nature of sacred geometry, typically becomes what Foster Gamble of the Thrive movie calls the torus equilibrium, that energy field that goes around the planet, that goes around each human, and it does come out of the crop circles. Why would all the crop circles be sitting over an aquifer of water? Because that resonance of these information from higher dimensional beings, they send it into the waters of Earth to go out into the ocean. I mean, I really feel that it's very intentional. So that's the sacred geometry. Then we have the binary codes. And the binary codes, as you know, can be deciphered by the ASCII code, the zeros and ones. The computers can analyze it. The mathematicians can analyze it. But we have really blatant binary code crop circles wrapped around, for instance, in 2001, when Donald Rumsfeld announced one day that $2.3 trillion was missing from government transactions, and mysteriously the next day, a new cover story was born, 9/11. Now, wrapped around that, before and after, maybe coincidentally, maybe not, were these two binary code crop circles. The one was the alien face in the disk. Do you remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the circle? The disk was zeros and ones. It was binary code. And when they deciphered that message, the message, I think, coincidentally or not, might have related to what we just experienced. It said, beware the bearers of false gifts and their broken promises. Much pain, but still time. Believe there is good out there. We oppose deception. Conduit closing. And before 9/11 happened, we had the Arecibo message, which was a response that we sent out from Arecibo in Puerto Rico, this huge telecommunication dish, that we sent this very specific message out into space, and we did it in our language through a code that told them basically our genetics, our DNA, our shape of our body, our telecommunication tower, all these different elements of our planet. And in 2001, they sent us back almost an identical mirror image with 9 specific changes. They had different nucleotides. They had a larger head, a different population. Their planets had a different layout. But it was really, really a similar image to the Arecibo message sent. Now, both of these binary codes, which can be read, and we did, and clearly deciphered, were not only in a farm field. They were 8 miles from each other, a year apart, but they're both sitting in a farm field that had telecommunication towers on the side. So it wasn't just any arbitrary field. The circle makers laid these important crop circle messages in fields where there were towers, where if the humans were conscious and awake enough, they would have the opportunity to shout it to the world. Did they? No. Another very interesting crop circle style is the pictograms, and that's where you see a picture. And in 2009, phenomenal summer of pictograms where we had all these fish. We had the squid. We had the dolphin spinning in a circle. We had 3 trout in a circle. We had really unusual sea creatures, squids, octopus, and then we had the ancient sea creature, the orthoceras. And then they hit us with birds. We had the owl and the thunderbird and the phoenix and all these different birds, like groups of sparrows. And we had the dragonfly. It had wings with veins in them. I mean, these crop circles were incredible, where you look at it and you don't have to scratch your head. It's obviously a phoenix. It's obviously a bird. And within 9 months, the BP oil spill happened and killed millions of birds, millions of fish, I'm sure millions of dragonflies, and might still be today, but it, in my opinion, was the higher dimensional beings giving us messages in the fields for all people to see. And instead, these crop circle messages are being swept under the rug because they are the only extraterrestrial communication that is in plain sight every year, year after year, without relenting. I don't know why people are ignoring it, and I certainly am giggling that that my movies are hidden this well. But people can find me on Amazon. Preferably, you can find me on my website, which is www.pattygreer.com. And I think that you guys on your radio show, I loved it that you said it wasn't a surprise that people enjoyed my presentation. But Lee Spiegel called me his biggest surprise because a lot of people that are highly intelligent in our field are bored with the crop circle talk because people aren't bringing in anything new. And I think that's what happened this year that was exciting. And I sold a ton of movies because I'm showing how real they really are. And I'm also showing in these films the delivery mechanism that they're bringing. They're coming in these big orange balls of light that have a doorway where the beings come out. I mean, it's really phenomenal. And it's all on film, and everybody has access really to, I think, all the important information. But when you've got a media conglomerate that are really committed to hide the important films and the important stuff so that humanity can't evolve and really get the truth, therein lies our problem today.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to be really, really careful not to welcome them into our community because we want disclosure, and it's going to happen. And I'm doing my part. And I'm really delighted to be in touch with the Circle Makers. Even here in America, I feel like I have constant contact and a consistent telepathic education.
Well, like you said, people can go to pattygreer.com to get your movies and get more information. We are out of time, but it's been very interesting and always a lot of fun to talk to you. And I'm sure, hopefully, you know, people can contact you or will contact you. You have like a Facebook and a also, right?
Yes.
So people can go contact you there. And you have a contact. This is all at your website, really, at pattygreer.com.
Yep. If you want to find me, pattygreer.com, definitely. Mm-hmm. And the last thing I want to mention is my brand new movie, The Shift, has hit the fan. And even though it didn't win Best Feature Film this year at your event, it is a really fascinating movie because now we're taking the crop circles into what they're really, many of them are telling us is about propulsion formulas. And this movie takes us into free energy and shows a lot of the scientists that are doing really successful things that are going to help this planet evolve without gas and oil and return to being a healthy, clean planet. That's the new movie, The Shift Has Hit the Fan.
Cool. And I love the name. Very creative. And thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for all you do, Alejandro.
All right. Thank you so much to Patty Greer for being on the show. PattyGreer.com is where you can go see more about her movies and about her ideas around crop circles. People love the movies, so go pick up a couple or get one and see what you like and check out the rest of them. I also want to remind you, all of the news that we talked about earlier today, you can see at openminds.tv. Also, you could go to our YouTube channel and see the latest episodes of Spacing Out. Remember, I told you that there is a new one, so you could see Jason and Maureen talking about the latest news on our YouTube. And then we also have some really cool interviews up there with Lee Spiegel and Jeffrey Bennett and also Richard Hoover, the NASA scientist. So some really cool interviews and some stuff about the conference up there as well. So go check out our YouTube if you haven't recently. There's a lot of cool stuff up there. Be sure also to subscribe to our magazine. I think I told you about the Washington, D.C. story that I'm working on. But the magazine is super awesome. And honestly, it would be great if you could subscribe to it because we really struggle with it. We don't really have as many subscribers as we need to keep it going. So we need some subscribers. It's really cheap. Go to openminds.tv to get it, and it's an awesome magazine. We have the stories are much longer and much more in-depth on the magazine than they are on the website. So go check that out. It's just Open Minds Magazine. And then finally, I want to thank the people who make the music. And right now, the people who make the music is Caleb Hanks. And we've been playing, first of all, a custom open music that he made for us, but also playing some music from his latest EP. It's called The Clerk Chronicles is the music. He also does some artwork and like a comic book kind of thing there. Either way, the music is super cool, and I love it. We're going to play a whole song today, and that's going to be the second track from the EP, which is called Wars Among Galaxies. To see more about Caleb Hanks and The Clerk, you can go to theclerkchronicles.com. And you can also download all this music for free there. So definitely go check that out and support him. He's an awesome musician, and I'm always so happy that he lets us use this music. Anyway, also thank you to you for listening and joining us. I will actually be out of town next week, so we won't have a show next week, but we'll have one the following week. It will be incredible, so you won't want to miss it. Have a wonderful couple of weeks. Adios, muchachos.